Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Hey, happy Saturday and welcome to Pirate Money Radio. I'm here with Mike Carter, my colleague. Hey, Mike, how is your weekend going?
Not just the weekend, the entire week has been fantastic. We've been at the Convention of Texas and talking pirate money all week, testifying at committee hearings, getting people rallied up. We're going to have some more important updates from this even as we go into next week, but this is a can't miss show.
Yeah, no, it's an educational process as we're educating legislators about what they can do to protect your money, how at the state level they can protect your money. So let me ask, we're pirates here, arg, yo-ho-ho, and, you know, pirate treasure and all that.
Though.
Yeah, good pirates. All right, so here's a question. Pirate money is, it's multiple choice. A, the name of my most recent book. B, the foundational money for America. C, a state-based solution for the debt crisis. D, gold doubloons and pieces of eight. Or E, all of the above.
Well, at first I'd say this is so easy, it has to be a trick question. But then I'm thinking, if I'm an audience member and I just heard about pirate money for the first time, I might say, what, the foundational money for the USA? Pirate money? Are you serious?
Yeah, no, absolutely serious. We talk about dollars here in America, right? A dollar is the foundation of our money. Well, that came from a Spanish term, the Spanish milled dollar. It was also known as a piece of eight, and its companion, the gold version of it, was worth 16 times as much, and it was called a gold doubloon. And when you hear the term gold doubloons and pieces of eight, what do you think?
I think of pirate money.
That's right. You think Captain Jack Sparrow, Long John Silver, or Buccaneers, or whatever. How about that? Do you remember the Hardy Boys, the books?
I do remember those. I think my wife might remember those better. I think she was more of a Hardy Boys fan.
Well, I read them as a kid.
Not.
Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, they were detectives.
Yeah,
they were kid detectives. You know, but now, if they remade them, they would be the Hardy people, maybe?
Oh, that would really take away. So,
all right. So there was a Mickey Mouse Club would do the Hardy Boys books, and they do little serials of them, you know, like the old serial back in the 50s. You know, I know they did this. Do you remember that? They had one of them was like Applegate's treasure, and they had, hey, producer Rich, do we have that to where we can play the clip from the Hardy Boys treasure? Just a little bit to hear what they talked about pirate treasure.
I remember the empty treasure chest and always thinking, maybe I could find some treasure somewhere out there.
Yeah, there it is. I've been looking throughout the attic for treasure. Haven't
gold
found it yet.
Doubloons and pieces of eight, handed down to Applegate from buccaneers who fought for years for gold doubloons and pieces of eight. Handed down in a pirate's chest, the gold they sailed for east and west, the treasure bright that made men fight, till none were left to bury the chest. So now the gold and pieces of eight all belong to Applegate. The chest is here, but wait. Now, where are those gold doubloons and pieces of eight, pieces of eight, pieces
Don't you of wish eight. Disney was making healthy stuff like that, you know?
Brings back wholesome kind of sound memories just hearing that. I remember being at my grandma's house and that kind of theme being in the background out there as the TV was on. But, you know, as we start to look for that treasure, that empty treasure, we did create a treasure map that might help people find this pirate money we're talking
about.
That's
true. We've been handing these out at the convention, a treasure map that walks through how you get from Jekyll Island, where we were shipwrecked in 1913, to the treasure, which is state-based economic freedom. And the way to do that is pirate money.
Pirate money. And there is true treasure there. There's true economic liberty as we get this legislation passed, not only in Texas, but in multiple states out there. And the people listening to this this radio are going to be the ones that help make this happen in their states by sharing this message. And if you hear it on the radio today, you know, I was just looking at some of the show prep here. I'm like, man, this is great. I hope everybody hears it because we're getting into real solutions today. And you might be in the car thinking, oh, man, I wish somebody else could hear it. This is on podcast. Anywhere you can listen to your favorite podcast, listen to this show, send it to your friends, and build this momentum in your state.
It could be Apple, Spotify, AFR. Mm-hmm. You know, it's available a lot of places. check us out on your favorite podcast, share this. But what we're talking about is pirate money. Some people look and say, pirate money? Aren't pirates criminals? I don't like pirates. And they forget that John Paul Jones, the founder of the American Navy, was a pirate. They forget that the Boston Tea Party was an act of piracy, according to the British. What it is standing up actually for economic justice. There's a whole chapter in my book, Pirate Money, titled Economic Justice. And the Bible says a lot about justice, particularly economic justice. Leviticus 19, 35 and 36, New King James says, "You shall do no injustice in judgment, in measurement of length, weight, or volume. You shall have honest scales, honest weights, an honest ephah, and an honest hen. I am the Lord your God.
Honest ephah, what is that?
All right, so I had to look it up. I got to tell you, I had to look it up.
Honest ephah.
Some kind of camel? Here it is. An ephah in the Bible is a measure of capacity for dry goods, things like flour and wheat, measuring them out by volume rather than weight. It's thought to be equivalent to around 30 liters or 8 U.S. gallons. Bottom line is a measurement.
Equal measures. Yeah.
You got to have fair measurement. And when the dollar has lost 90% of its value since 1971 and 99% since it was introduced in 2013 as a Federal Reserve note, that doesn't seem all that honest. It seems like an unfair, unjust weight and measure. That's what we're talking about.
It does, but I'm sure the Federal Reserve is there to try and correct this wrong that's happened out there and probably on the right track to do that.
Funny you brought up Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve is who creates our money. Now, how do they do that? Let's ask Jared Bernstein, the current head working for Biden of the Council of Economic Advisors, and he was with President Biden for 8 years as vice president, and he's with President Biden today as number one economic advisor. Let's listen to what Jared Bernstein says about how money is created.
Like you said, they print the dollar. So why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets some of the language that the MM, some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money. And it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Since they sell bonds, and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah. So a lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money, and then it uses that money to. I guess I can't really talk. I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, because it's like the government clearly prints money. It does it all the time, and it clearly borrows. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation. So I don't think there's anything confusing there.
Yeah, nothing confusion.
So that was the number one economic advisor for the Biden team.
Yeah, that's the top guy. And that's for a documentary where he was interviewed. It was a Finding the Source of the Money documentary. It's a great clip that's run the rounds on YouTube.
Well, there's some good news here, Kevin. I brought in a special guest today that we had on the convention floor. We have George Washington in the studio today. I don't know if you saw him standing back here.
Yeah, no, we had him at our booth here at the convention. But Jared Bernstein, the advisor to the current president, not to that president, not the first president, it doesn't sound like he really understands what money is, where it comes from, how it's made, why the government is $35 trillion in debt. He seems very, very confused. But the good news is, I believe that he is on a perfect communication level for the current president of the United States.
They seem to be talking the same language.
We're buddies. We got this. We understand it. All right.
Well, that's why our guest over here, it says, this is on George Washington. Now, we had a little fun with this. And again, if you're watching it, it's easier to see. But if you're on the radio, he's got a banner, George does, here, life size, George Washington, well, almost life size. It's time to use the pirate money clause in the Constitution. And to explain what that means, Kevin.
Well, we're going to have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll talk about the pirate money clause in the Constitution, why Jared Bernstein's understanding is way off base, but what the Federal Reserve is doing and how it is hurting you. We'll be back after the break.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Well, we just heard Jared Bernstein, the number one, the head, the chairman of the Council on Economic Advisors, the top dog, explaining to our president, Biden, exactly how money is created and where it comes from. And Mike, what did you think about what he said?
Well, some of that language, we do print money and we do lend, but it's really difficult to understand. I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. It was in a documentary. It's kind of sad. But what is money? How is it used? Where does it come from? Let's talk about that. And then we'll get into and explain why we are called pirate money, what that exactly means.
Yeah, and I know before the break, I kind of teased this George Washington thing. But we talked briefly about why would he have a sign on him that says it's time to implement this pirate money clause? Is it because of what we just saw here? I can't really explain what we do in the government with money.
It's because the government has lost track of what money is meant to be, what it should be. Washington knew what it was. A dollar was a 0.7734 troy ounces of fine silver. It's called a Spanish mill dollar. They would cut it up into eight pieces. They called it pieces of eight. And then there was gold version called gold doubloons. And gold doubloons and pieces of eight, we played that Hardy Boys clip. Bottom line is that was pirate money, but it was also foundational money for the United States system. When they look at the Constitution and they said a dollar, they meant that, a silver dollar. Now, you've got two stickers on you from the convention. Tell us what those stickers are.
Oh, yeah. I've got one from famous Texan Davy Crockett, who says, CBC may go to hell. My gold is going to Texas.
CBDC may go to hell, but my gold. Central bank digital currency, we've talked about that is a very dangerous thing. It's Biden bucks is another term for it. It's Executive Order 14067, March of 2022. The President of the United States ordered the Federal Reserve to study and implement a digital currency that would completely control what we do, how we do, and so forth. We'll talk about that in a bit in the program. What's the other sticker?
Another one is Alexander Hamilton, our first Secretary of Treasury. And I think if we asked him what the Fed does with money, he'd do a better job than what we just heard out there. But we maybe interpreted this a little bit, but I think he would say, I support the Texas pirate money revolution.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, because they know what money is. Unlike, it sounds, Jared Bernstein, money is three things. It's a unit of account, it's a means of exchange, and it's a store of value. What that means is, a unit of account, when you take something, you can price it in dollars, and you know how many dollars it takes to buy a candy bar. That's just hard for me to get my head around because it takes more than a dollar to buy a candy. I remember when I was a kid, it cost 10 cents to buy a candy bar. My dad would tell me penny candy was a candy bar. But now it costs a couple of dollars at local convenience store, 7-Eleven, Quick Trip, whatever. It's a unit of account. You can measure things in terms of dollars. It's a means of exchange. Mike, if I had chickens and you had gasoline and we wanted to exchange them, we would actually exchange dollars rather than you asking me to bring three chickens to pay for so much gas and so forth. So it's a means of exchange, and it's supposed to be a store of value, meaning that if I put aside a certain amount of money in 10 years, that money would still have value. Unfortunately, 90% of the value of the dollar has declined since 1971, 99%, something close to that, since the dollar was introduced as a Federal Reserve note. And I used this illustration recently in a talk that we gave together here at this convention, where if one person took 10 $20 gold coins in 1924, 100 years ago, and said, I'm going to leave these for my grandkids or great-grandkids, and another person took 10 $20 Federal Reserve notes and put that in an envelope to leave to their grandkids 100 years later, which ones would be happy, the one opening the 10 gold coins or the one opening the 10 $20 bills?
Well, unlike that economic advisor, I'm going to pick the coins.
You're going to go with the coins. Well, good choice. If we were on the game show of The Price is Right or whatever, you would have about $24,000 in today's money with the 10 gold coins, or $200.
Yeah, yeah.
And that should illustrate whether or not paper money is a store of value or Now, something real like gold is a store of values.
You know, history. We're getting into the history of money here. And at first, you're like, well, why would I want to know about the history of money? But I think the problem that we've all fallen into is it's too easy to say money is the dollar. It's the paper money. It's fiat currency. That's just the way it is. There's that normalcy bias out there. Walk through a little bit more about that history piece.
Exactly right. All right. The founders. Let's go back to George Washington. When he was General Washington, not President Washington, but when he was general at Valley Forge. We all know the story of Valley Forge, how the troops were there and they were starving and they had no shoes. And, you know, it really was a bad situation. Why was that? That was because the Continental Congress had allocated money. They called it the money they allocated Continental Notes. And they said on there, payable to the bearer in four Spanish milled dollars, which are pieces of eight, or the equivalent value in gold and silver, which they said was real money. The problem was they didn't have anything to back up the paper. They were printing unbacked paper money, and it collapsed in value. And Washington said a wagon load full of Continentals would not buy a wagon full of supplies. And they just stack it up. It was worthless paper. They stuffed it in their socks because they didn't have shoes.
Wow.
That's how bad it was. Or they'd burn it by at the fire in order to keep warm. Now, that's happened, by the way, not just to the Continentals. That's happened in Venezuela, where money has lined the streets because it's unbacked paper money. It's worthless. Okay, so when they had finished that, they said, we're going to have an Article of Confederation, and every state's going to have its own money. And they did. All 13 colonies became 13 states, and New York had their money, and Massachusetts had their money, but it had differing weights and measures. Different amounts of gold. Some of them would put base metals in it, which is known as debasing the currency, which has always ruined civilizations. It ruined Rome when they debased the denarius. The silver content of the denarius went from 100% to 0% over several hundred years, and it ruined the Roman Empire. And the Articles of Confederation had debased coins at various levels among the states. And so that was a failed monetary system. May have been why the Articles actually failed. And then we wrote a constitution. And in the constitution, James Madison made certain that when they wrote about money, they said that a state can make nothing but gold and silver coins, real gold, real silver, to be legal tender in a state. And that was brilliant. That was one of the greatest things that they did. And then they prevented us from having bills of credit.
And that's what we're calling the pirate money clause.
That is the pirate money clause. That's what... here President Washington's talking about, but they said no bills of credit. You know what a bill of credit is?
A bill of credit is probably something like the dollar in my billfold.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bill. You call it a dollar bill. It's also called a note. It'll say it's a Federal Reserve note. It is a promise to pay, just like that Continental back during the Revolutionary War. It's a I will pay the bearer four Spanish mill dollars or the equivalent in gold and silver. It's a promise to pay backed by nothing. It's different from a warehouse receipt. For example, a warehouse receipt would be Bank of Kentucky notes that were deemed constitutional. The Constitution forbids bills of credit. It says it right in there. It doesn't give the power to the federal government, and it certainly didn't. It prohibited the states from issuing bills of credit. Hey, we'll pay you on Tuesday. States can borrow money, but they can't issue bills of credit to be used as currency. But a Bank of Kentucky note was deemed in 1837 in a court case taken to the Supreme Court, won 6-1 in favor of the Bank of Kentucky, allowing them to take gold and silver on deposit in their Bank of Kentucky and issue out what were essentially warehouse receipts. Our warehouse has on store, you know, one silver dollar or 1/8 of a silver dollar, and you could take your warehouse receipts and turn them into the Bank of Kentucky and get your real money out, or you could exchange them as currency. And the court ruled that's legitimate as long as you actually have the silver and gold that you're supposed to have.
So if I have silver and gold, let's say, in the Texas Bullion Depository, and instead of using those notes, I use my debit card, it's the same thing.
That's where we're going. That's pirate money. That's the clause, 1837, Briscoe versus Bank of Kentucky. That is the court case, that's the seminal court case where the court ruled that, yes, you could take gold and silver, gold doubloons and pieces of eight, and put them on reserve, or gold and silver bullion, because remember the Continental said, four Spanish mil dollars, four pieces of eight, or the equivalent in gold and silver, you put them on deposit, and then you could, if you actually have them on deposit, it's not a bill of credit. It is actually a warehouse receipt.
I don't have to sing or anything like that when I pay for it with this card, do I?
No, you don't have gold or blue.
No, but it's kind of fun. It's kind of sticking in my mind. I'm afraid I might be doing that.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things that we played it. But all right, so American money evolved from Spanish coins at the beginning of the foundation to the Bank of Kentucky issued notes that were really warehouse receipts. And eventually during the Civil War, they went to completely unbacked paper currency known as greenbacks. And that was the official money. How did we evolve? We evolved from the Spanish coins, real gold and silver, to greenbacks. And even the Confederacy had the Confederate money, none of which was. And by the way, the courts challenged it. They lost, and then they packed the courts. A long story. I recount all of it in the book Pirate Money, which I, if you read it, you'll read the story. But there's a story in there that I think explains why we are so ignorant. Jared Bernstein, so ignorant about how money is created. But 100 years ago, even school children knew how it was created. You remember the movie, The Wizard of Oz?
Absolutely.
All right.
Am I going to be singing another song here soon?
You know, we are going to be hearing about the trip to the Wizard of Oz. But before we get there, I do want to cover a couple more things. And then after the break, we'll hit the Wizard of Oz hard. Bottom line is that people used to know what money is. Today, they don't. We just take it for granted. And that's the problem, is we don't understand. You go to the store and you say, why does this cost twice as much as it did before? Is it because the cost of things are going up, or is it because the value of the money is going down?
Well, Joe Biden tells me it's those evil manufacturers and businesses.
Yeah, the inflation, that's it. No, the definition of inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. And if you print lots and lots of money, what you're going to end up with is inflation. That's the cause of it. It is not because evil manufacturers have raised prices. They're barely keeping their heads above water, just like you are at home. If you're dealing with gasoline prices, if you're dealing with food prices, restaurant prices, a hamburger costing $12 when it should cost $4, that's because we've produced and thrown way too much money in the system. Inflation is and always has been a monetary phenomenon. That's the great economist Milton Friedman taught us that. So, bottom line is, when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking the wonderful Wizard of Oz and what school children know that we've forgotten today. How can we learn from this kids movie and book? We'll be right back after the break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
You're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. You'll find he is a wizard of wiz, if ever a wiz there was. If ever, oh, ever a wiz there was, the Wizard of Oz is one because of the wonderful things he does.
You know, that just scared me silly as a kid. I was a little kid, and it played every year on TV, and it scared me awful. Because what we were looking at when we watched that was the aftermath of a tornado. And tornado, I grew up in Oklahoma, and tornado scared me.
I didn't understand the theme of the movie until Pirate Money book. But that, and, you know, seeing the little guys running around and all that stuff. I didn't understand the flying monkeys. I was like, what is this thing about?
Now,
but now that I see it, and after hearing Gerald Bernstein speak, maybe we just need to send him the movie.
Yeah, with an explanation.
Yeah.
And the movie gets one thing wrong. What did you notice the one thing wrong in the clip we watched?
Those slippers?
Yeah, the slippers were ruby red slippers, right? The Wizard of Oz, just in case you haven't read the book Pirate Money, the Wizard of Oz is an economic allegory. It is an explanation of how our monetary system works, because they thought that we had lost our way with the greenbacks. And the greenbacks were unbacked paper money that was issued during the Civil War that was taking us down that rabbit hole. I guess I'm using mixing my kids' movies here. The rabbit hole would be the Alice in Wonderland, but they'd taken us down the rabbit hole of unbacked paper money, just like the Continentals. We were off course, and L. Frank Baum wrote a book around the turn of the century, like 1899, 1900, about the wonderful Wizard of Oz. See, Dorothy had gotten in this economic turmoil called a tornado. She was whisked away from Kansas into this strange world of monetary policy and phenomena. And she, the house fell on the witch, and you know, I have all this stuff, but she put on eventually some slippers and walked on the yellow brick road. And the slippers were silver, the yellow brick road was gold represented, and they were to find their way back to real America, Kansas. The Wizard of Oz, even OZ, is the abbreviation for ounce. Whenever you write 12 ounces, you write OZ. It's about gold and silver, and it is about how that's the solution. And who's challenging it? The Wicked Witch of the East would be the bankers of the Northeast. The Munchkins were the citizens. By the way, the Flying Monkeys, lawyers.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And they were off to see the wizard.
Scares me more.
Yeah, the monkeys, they're a little scary. You're off to see the wizard, and what was he going to? The Emerald City, which was representing, emerald is green, representing the greenbacks, but what they discovered is there's no power, no authority behind the curtain, nothing behind to back the money up, but if she would click her silver heels together on the yellow brick road, she could go back to Kansas. It was an argument for a bimetal standard in America. Had you ever heard that before?
Not until I read the book Pirate Money, but it made it simple and easy to understand some of these things. That, and combined with your analogy with Monopoly, and I think that all makes sense why we have a book called Pirate Money. It's another way of easily telling this story. And we know we've been in Texas here. The champion behind legislation here in Texas has been Mark D'Orazio, and he's used that Wizard of Oz and Monopoly games to help everybody understand what this is about. It's not a difficult subject. And we're seeing bipartisan support, Republicans and Democrats that say, I get this. Money isn't what I thought it is. It was different from our founding days. And there is an easy constitutional answer that allows states to move forward with this.
Yeah. So here we've got, this is the pirate money treasure map that we've been handing out here at the convention. It starts in Jekyll Island, which is where they created the Federal Reserve System in 1913. Actually, they met in 1910 and Congress passed it in 1913. And on the map, it says we were shipwrecked here in 1913. This pirate money map shows the only path to escape the island and get the treasure. And the first thing it goes past is the fiat money monster. You know what fiat money is? It's unlimited monetary printing. Now, when we say that, let's talk about what that means, unlimited money printing.
Well, I understand the monster because the monster's been eating 90% of our wealth, right? We've got a dollar worth 90% of what it was since we went off the gold standard.
That 10% of what it was. Yeah. It's lost 90%.
Yeah, lost 90%. Wow.
So let's play. We've got a clip from multiple Fed chairmen and a Federal Reserve Bank president who are talking about, how does the Fed create money? Do they match it to the gold and silver they have on deposit as the law required back in 1913? Or in 1971, when Nixon took us off the gold standard, they no longer back it by gold and silver. Do you have that clip that we could play?
You simply flooded the system with money.
Yes, we did.
So to lend to a bank, we simply use the computer to mark up the size
Bernanke
of the account that they have with the Fed.
Former Fed chairman.
So it's much more akin, although not exactly the same, but it's much more akin to printing money than it is to borrowing.
You've been printing money.
Well, effectively.
Where does it come from? Do you just print it?
We print it digitally. So we as a central bank, we have the ability
to create
money.
Current Fed chairman, Jerome Powell.
Digital.
Flooding the system with money.
Yes, exactly.
And there's no end to your ability to do that.
There is no end to our ability to do that.
That's a Fed president right now, I think, is Minneapolis, Neel Kashkari. Bottom line is we're looking at a monetary phenomenon. Fed is printing money. That's why we have inflation. There is no question that's why we have inflation. And the Fed had no intention of stopping. So what do we do about that?
Well, that's where I'm going to go back to our guest here. I think it's time to execute the pirate money clause in the Constitution.
Well, can we go back to gold and silver? The problem I have with that is, of course, if I carry a gold doubloon and a piece of eight, like the Hardy Boys were trying to find the treasure from Applegate, if I carry that in and I go in and walk into a coffee shop and hand them one of those, will I be able to buy a cup of coffee? I've tried that, by the way. I've actually gone to a coffee shop in Dallas, and they wouldn't take it.
Yeah, well, at the prices things are going to now, it was probably just a little bit of dust, which makes it even more difficult. A little gold dust you blew their way?
I took a coin in. The funny thing is, the young man who was there at the coffee shop, it was at one of the hotels, and I said, I'd like to buy a cup of coffee, and I'd like to pay for it with this. I don't know why I didn't grab that. It was a half a scudo, which means it was worth hundreds of dollars. He could have grabbed that and said, I'll give you whatever coffee you want, mister. But instead, he said, no, I can't take that. I can't accept it. It's hard to carry gold and silver coins. It's hard to divide them. So are they a good unit of account? Not really. Are they a good means of exchange? Not really. Are they a good store of value? Absolutely, yes. So how do we solve that problem, Mike? You've been teaching, educating legislators, educating public members. How do we solve the problem of using gold and silver as money like it used to be used and solving this, avoiding this debt monster and avoiding all the other
problems?
Absolutely.
Well, that's the beautiful part about modern technology and electric technology. So, and we're going back to that Briscoe versus Kentucky piece there. The ability to take certificates or say, hey, I've got this little gold sitting safely in a vault in Texas, and having a debit card which represents that gold and being able to spend that anywhere I spend MasterCard out there. Now, gold and silver, for the first time, can easily be transactional, making our constitutional rights, our state constitutional rights, an easy next step for this to become a reality. We're not selling gold on this show, right? We're simply educating people what our constitutional state-based rights are and showing people how easy it is to implement this.
Well, and equally important, we're showing them a proof of concept, and we're not recommending to anyone that they should do this or not do this, but if you want a proof of concept, there's a commercial application out there. I started using it. I'm not suggesting, recommending, it, merely saying it exists. It's called Glint. I got it on my iPhone, Glint Pay, and it's an app. And I deposited a certain amount of money there, and I've gone and I've spent and I bought coffee with it. I bought a bag of oranges. I paid for dinner with it. It actually makes gold money again. Now, I love it. It's a proof of concept, but I think there are two drawbacks.
Well, I think you even got three of them. In fact, we were talking the other day, you came up with a great analogy with the three T's.
Oh, yeah. So the trust aspect is the first one. You're right. There are three potential drawbacks. Number one, you trust it. But the second drawback is...
Trust being, do I trust the gold I'm buying is real? Is it the quality that I have? And if a state's behind that, that becomes credible to me.
Right. And I love Glint. And the founder of Glint actually has heard about it, read the book, flown in, spent time with us, went with us to meet various states to show the proof of concept. But the gold is held in Switzerland and it's a company out of the United Kingdom. I would trust more a company in Texas or Oklahoma or Utah. And I'd trust more if the gold were where I could go see it rather than in Switzerland. But yeah, trust is a big thing. And you know, a lot of people buy gold from Costco because they don't know who to buy it from. Trust is an issue with them, too. So trust is an issue. And the second issue,
taxes. Taxes, yeah. So, you know, right now, if you're fortunate enough to have a gain, you're probably going to pay taxes at the end of the year if your gold goes up in value because it's not technically registered as functional currency, functional money. But as we get this legislation passed in the states out there, we believe, according to the IRS code, and we're not financial advisors, we're not tax advisors or experts, but reading the letter of the law on that, it appears that this makes it functional currency, which will give a way to avoid those capital gains taxes.
Could you imagine that, the ability to buy gold? Like in 1924, if you bought a $20 gold piece and you held that, it's worth $2,400 today, but a third of that, or close to it, would go away when you spent it, that $2,400. Say, I've got a big gain, and you'd spend it. Really, you don't have a big gain. All you did was preserve your purchasing power. It's immoral to tax money that merely preserves the purchasing power, but that's what the government's doing. If this system is set up, though, and it's state-based constitutional currency, like President Washington here is suggesting, if we use that clause and made it, we would be potentially, I believe, exempt from capital gains taxation. So that's the second one. What is it?
Well, we can do it obviously with a private company now, but that, you know, we've got a historical precedent out there where the government has taken gold from people before.
Yeah, 1933, right?
Yes.
Gold confiscation by FDR. And why did he confiscate it? The order says itself, because people were hoarding gold and not using it transactionally. So this clause in the Constitution and at state level, that would be almost impossible for the government to confiscate your gold. They could not just take it from you. It'd be held at the state, number one. And number two, we're making it transactional, not hoarding it. It's the exact opposite of what the order was based on. So I think we've got a good protection. I think this bill, this pirate money idea that we've covered in the book, Pirate Money, that we've talked about in the States, we talk about in this radio program all the time. I think it's a creative way to protect yourself and hedge yourself against the risks of inflation, the risks of national debt, all of the problems that we've got coming. But there's another problem after the break that we're going to talk about, and that's the role of central bank digital currency. If we don't enact pirate money, what is our government going to cram down on us? And how will it affect you? We'll cover this right after this next break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And Mike Carter is here with me also. We're talking pirate money, something Mike and I have been working on now for, 18 months? I've been dreaming of this for, 40 years. And now we're beginning to see it implemented. We're seeing a lot of people showing interest. We're educational in nature. That's what we're doing, is educating. But we're finding legislators and real American citizens across the country are saying, I want this. I want real gold and silver that I can spend and not too expensive to acquire, safely stored for me, someplace I can trust, that I won't be taxed on. Well, the founders gave us this in the Constitution. What is it? Article 1, Section 10?
Article 1, Section 10. And you know, Kevin, what I appreciate about you is you're so able to see into the future. You're prescient in terms of issues and how to solve those things. And that vision that or dream you had 40 years ago is becoming a reality today. But what's amazing is how hidden it's been from people until now, until Pirate Money book came out. People see it's right here in the Constitution, and then they see the technology is there to make it happen today. It makes it super, super exciting. And then we see another huge reason we need this is this whole CBDC threat and what that means to us.
Yeah, central bank digital currency is a huge threat to our livelihood, our privacy, really our liberty. And so we've compiled a clip of various people from the Bank of International Settlements, the International Monetary Fund, the World Economic Forum. These are the globalists that want to take over our money, control of our money supply. And it looks like President Biden in Executive Order 14067 is going along with them, wanting to implement this. Let's listen in their own words what three gentlemen from the globalist, pinnacle of economics say about what central bank digital currency is like and what it will mean for you personally. Let's roll that clip.
All our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who's using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations.
Okay, let's stop here. This guy is the head of the Bank for International Settlements. Now, we had a whistleblower who called us in who was a contractor working at the BIS and said, they're working on the key words, he said, absolute control. He said, with U.S. dollars, with paper money, you go in, nobody knows who you are. You spend a $100 bill, they don't know where it came from. They don't know where it's going. They don't know who had it. But they will know exactly who you are, exactly what you're doing with it, and they'll have absolute control. Our whistleblower said they're very close to enacting this. So that's the Bank of International Settlements, which is BIS, which is the banker of banks. And they really are at the top of the banking food chain. All right, now let's talk about
the... And then the scary part about that is he came right out and said it. The problem is we don't know who's spending that $100. We don't know who's spending that $1,000. Do I really need somebody to be policing me and everything that I spend?
They said the problem is we don't have absolute control, and we will have absolute control. That's the message there. Okay, so senior manager of the BIS. Let's go now to the International Monetary Fund and see what they say about central bank digital currency.
And the one final note I will make is
this World Economic Forum.
The benefits of digital money, there are huge potential gains. It's not just about digital forms of physical currency. You can have programmability, units of central bank currency with expiry dates. You could have, as I argue in my book, a potentially better, and some people might see it, or a darker world where the government decides that units of central bank money can be used to purchase some things, but not other things that it deems less desirable, like, say, ammunition or drugs or pornography or something of the sort. And that is very powerful in terms of the use of a CBDC, and I think also extremely dangerous for central banks. Because ultimately, if you have different units of central bank money with different characteristics, or if you use central bank money as a conduit for economic policies in a very targeted way, or more broadly for social policies, that could really affect the integrity of central bank money and the integrity and independence of central banks.
Okay, stop right there. Stop right there. What he just said is he said with the central bank digital currency, you can have control in that you can have expiry dates. That means your money could expire like a coupon expires. And you go to pay for something and say, I'm sorry, your money's not good anymore. But you can also say that you are against ammunition, and so you go to buy ammunition, and they cut you. I said, no, you can't buy ammunition. You can buy baby formula, but not ammunition with this, for absolute control. So this is World Economic Forum. Now, we also saw a clip that we rolled in our presentation from the International Monetary Fund, where they were saying the exact same things. This is the same song by everyone. This is the goal of central bank digital currency, absolute control, shutting your money off. And then the IMF guy said, you can take it for equity purposes. Meaning, Mike, if you have more than I have, they could take money from you and give it to me because you're too white, or you're too this, or you're too that, or you're a man. I said I was a woman today, so they'll take some of your money and give it to me, right?
Yeah, and that reinforces again why it's time to use the pirate money clause that's in the Constitution. We don't want to give up our liberty, our economic freedoms. And we are on a pathway to that happening. They're not hiding it. They're saying what they want to do with this.
They're saying exactly what they want to do with this. But here's the problem. If the federal government chooses to do that and they make that money constitutionally, there's nothing you can do about it, because the Congress has the power to coin money. And if they choose to coin it digitally, they can. And if they choose to program it, they can. You can fight it in the state legislature all you want, but we fought for the Defense of Marriage Act. It even passed in California, and guess what? It didn't matter. Defense of Marriage Act was overridden by a federal court. And Congress can override those kind of things. We had that with the speed limits, where they said 55 miles an hour is the fastest and you can travel in the United States. And the states said, hey, wait a minute, that's state policy, not federal policy. And they said, well, then we won't give you any money. We'll cut you off. They'll be able to do that. But there is an alternative, a clause left in the Constitution, 17 words, that the state can have its own money as long as it's gold and silver. And with modern technology, gold doubloons and pieces of eight, or gold and silver bullion under court rulings, with modern technology, you can make that spendable. And if you make gold and silver spendable, you have an alternative monetary system. It is a brilliant answer that George Washington and James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, they all gave us, Alexander Hamilton, in the Constitution. And by the way, that's why We are promoting pirate money as states should exercise their constitutional rights.
That's right. We're promoting the legislation. And as we get this legislation done, it's not going to just be Texas. It's going to be Florida. It's going to be Utah. It's going to be Oklahoma. It's going to be Iowa. It's going to be Kansas. You know, any of these states out there that are really constitutional focused, we'll see that the opportunity to execute this and stand together to make sure that they stay strong.
And you've got to use your money for good purposes. God expects that from us.
Yes.
He said, this is something I've given you. It belongs to him. By the way, there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, or you can invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates both on Apple and Android phones. For more information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile, you can find it available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And we are here in the convention in Texas talking about pirate money, but Texas is not the only state that's looking at this.
No, it's not. And I got a question from an audience member here just asking, well, if it gets done in Texas or it gets done in Florida, and I live in a state, I don't know where they're from, let's say Minnesota, can I still transact and take advantage of what's going on in Texas and Florida?
I believe you can. Based on Briscoe versus Bank of Kentucky ruling, people were circulating Bank of Kentucky notes throughout the United States, and they were considered acceptable legal tender because they were represented by gold and silver. The court ruled in favor of that. So Minnesota or Kansas or Massachusetts or North Dakota or Florida, it doesn't matter. We just need to win in one or more states to get this constitutional right given to you. And we're not political in this. We're educational in this. When people are educated on it, they say that that's what they want. Money is right now being threatened. It's a serious problem that we're having. By the way, that was a great question. And if you have a question, you can send us your questions at AFR@piratemoneyradio.com. That's AFR@piratemoneyradio.com. Just send us an email and we'll try and respond to your question on a future program. Mike, where can people learn more about what we're doing here?
Transactionalgold.com is a great resource just to kind of see what's happening across a number of states out there. But piratemoneybook.com is the resource to go to. I really encourage everybody to order that book, order multiple copies of that book. In fact, we have a bundle. You can buy 10 of them. At special pricing.
Well, now, wait a minute. We're not selling anything here.
Yes, I know.
No.
I get over enthusiastic trying to get the word out and educate.
Yeah. No, you can learn a lot about pirate money at piratemoneybook.com if you want more information. Again, we're not trying to sell anything here. We just want to educate people. That's our goal here. If you want to understand why trust, taxes, and taking mandate this be done at the state level, if you want to understand what banks think of this or why the Wizard of Oz is an economic allegory and why you can learn so much about the monetary system from a children's book. All of those things, they're in the book Pirate Money. We're just here to help people be educated. We're here for Saturday morning, just enjoying on American Family Radio and sharing with people all the things that they should learn about a monetary solution that our founders, like General Washington here, President Washington, put into the Constitution. And it's a privilege to be working with you, Mike. It's been fun being here at the convention with you and the talks that we've given. All right, Pirate Money Radio. We cover this topic and many others. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday. This is Pirate Money Radio with Kevin Freeman and Mike Carter, bringing solutions every week.